So this week we're starting a new parsha, like we do every week. So it begins and it says, Vayishma Yitro, Kohen Midian, Chotein Moshe, et kol asher asa, Elokim leMoshe b'Yisrael amo, ki hotzi Hashem et Yisrael miMitzrayim. Now the truth is that there's so many problems or difficulties or confusion in that one verse that we probably should not go any further than just read this. And I'll tell you this, along the way, if I do this right, I'm going to lose you. And when I lose you, you have no idea how I got to where I'm going to. But just realize, all I'm trying to do is just explain this one pasuk over here. So, Vayishma Yitro. So Yitro hears something. What is it that he hears? So we'll see that there's some debate to that, and that's going to be part of our problem. Secondly, he's called Kohen Midian, so we don't know what it means to be a Kohen Midian, if it's a political or religious position, which means, does Kohen Midian mean that he is the priest of Midian, and I'll say the priest for Avodah Zarah of Midian, or does Kohen Midian mean that he is an individual of power, political power, he's the sheikh of Midian. So what is it that he hears? We'll see some of the intrigue. The second thing that it says over here, it kol asher asa Elokim leMoshe. So there is absolutely, without question, a focus over here on the name of God of Elokim. And that's what he hears. He hears Elokim. So he heard what Elokim did to Moshe, but we don't know what it is that he heard. So again, I don't want to overplay that. But then you have another phrase, which is not clear how it's connected to the first part of the phrase. Part of it is that it switches the name of God, Ki Yotzi Hashem, at Yisrael Mimitzrayim. So now, even though we're going to find out that in Chazal there's this whole argument, a disagreement about what is it that he heard, it sounds very much, what does he hear? He heard about Yotzi Mitzrayim. Which means, why exactly do we have an argument? And by the way, I'm not the first one to raise this question. Like, so for example, if you look at Rashi in source number 2 will say, Mashmu Hashem Oba, what did he hear? Now the answer should be, Ki Yotzi Hashem Yisrael Mimitzrayim. That's what he heard. But the question really would be, in Chazal, okay, he heard the Jews left, but what is it about the leaving that he heard that caused him to come? Vayishma Yitro kol Midian chotem et kol asher asa Elokim leMoshe leYisrael amo, Ki Yotzi Hashem Yisrael Mimitzrayim. Now is that an editorial comment, or is that part of what he heard? What is that key? Is that, again, part of what it's explaining what he heard, or is this an editorial comment? My suspicion is it's the latter. And I'll tell you why I'm saying this. There seems to be I'm going to call it a hyper-focus on Elokim, or the concept of Elokim, or some of the concepts of Elokim, on Yitro's part. So it says in Pasuk Bet, V'yikach Yitro choten Moshe et Tzipora, and the other intrigue, of course, is the name Yitro. The name keeps changing along the way. One of my father's favorite, I'll say Dvar Torah, but you can decide, is that why does Yitro have 7 names? Because it says because he had 7 daughters. So every time he made a wedding, he went bankrupt and he had to change his name in order to get a line of credit for the next wedding. Okay, so if this rings true for some of you, then wonderful. Thank you. Maybe that's what got me thinking about this. Vayikach Yitro Choten Moshe. So here he is called Yitro. And part of the intrigue is going to be father-in-law, brother-in-law, and so when we get to another case later on. Sipora Eshet Moshe Achar Shilucheha, after she was sent away, which is of course also interesting, when exactly was she sent away, according to this. And now you'll realize there's a whole narrative that could be built over there. Ve'et Shnei Baneha, and that's also very interesting why it's called Shnei Baneha and not Moshe's children. I mean, what's this particular perspective? Ashashem Achad Gershom, Ki Amar Ger Yiti Beres Nachriya, V'shem Achad Eliezer, Ki Amar Avi, Elokei Avi, Be'ezri Vatzilenu Mecherev Paro. V'yivo Yitro Chotein Moshe Avonav Vishto El Moshe, El HaMidbar Asher Hu Choneshem. And you notice me slowing down as I'm translating this. You see that? I don't even have to tell you what I want to say. It's just a question of using your voice here. Where does he arrive? Ela midbar, Ashehu Chonesham, Har HaElokim. So what would be another way of calling this place? Well, we know it more often by its name Sinai. Sometimes it's called Chorev. But he is out there, so it says, by the Midbar, by where they're encamped, by the Har Elokim. There is a problem in all of this, which I want to, which, till I started reading this like this, I'm not sure if exactly if you realized the problem. Let me perhaps just put it like this. In the beginning of the next chapter, which is going to be, of course, Perek Yutet, we're then informed that Am Yisrael arrive. Let's just see if we have this here someplace. In the beginning of Perek Yutet, we're told that Am Yisrael arrive at Har Sinai, and by the Midbar, by Har Sinai, which means they arrive there. So what exactly are they doing there already in Perek Yutet? So let's go for a second to Rashi. I want to go a little bit back and forth. Vayishma Yitro, what does he hear? Mashmu Shema Uba Kriyat Yam Suf Umuchemet Amalek. Now, the good thing about both of those events is they both happened in last week's Parsha. So therefore, you know, as we read these things, we get deluded into thinking that we had a whole week to get there, right? Between last Motzai Shabbos, still today. He's got a week to travel, and he hears about it. And it could be the logistics are a little bit more complicated than that. If we think about this perhaps a little bit more clearly, how much time has it been since Kriyat Yam Suf, and how much time since Milchamet Amalek? So if they arrive around Rosh Chodesh, that's Rosh Chodesh Sivan. So that gives us 50 days from Yitziat Mitzrayim. But the splitting of the sea is another week later. So now you're down to around 43 days. There is this whole computation in Chazal that Milchamet Amalek took place most likely, there's a two-day battle there. It's most likely Kaf Zayin and Kaf Chet of Iyar. Yeah, so it's right before Rosh Chodesh. Right before Rosh Chodesh. Incidentally, the same days that will be, it will be 1 week before, Matan Torah. And it's the same day, by the way, as Yom Yerushalayim. So that's also... That's also what's interesting. We've spoken about this, but that is the date that comes out from the Seder Olam Rabbah. So now let's try this again. So between the splitting of the sea, which is 1 week again, it was 50 days altogether till Matan Torah, but they get there also a couple days before they get there in Rosh Chodesh. So therefore, if you take away a couple days at the end, you take away a couple days at the middle, which means you have a month and change on both sides. And so how much time does he hear? So if he's hearing Yitziat Mitzrayim, so that could be from the day that that they walk out. If it's from the Kriyat Yam, now you just now lost 7 days. If it's what Yitro hears is the splitting of the sea lost, but if it's Milchamet Amalek, so now you've lost even more time, which gives him a very small frame of time to get there. If, however, you look in source number 3, so over here, it's a Gemara in Zvachim, and it starts by saying, Ve'yikach Yitro, Chotein Moshe, Olau Zvachim, Lelokim, which we'll get to soon, and it says, Yitro, Achar Matan Tarahava, that Yitro arrives after Matan Tarah, and then it brings different opinions, and it says, okay, what did he hear? Mashmua shema ubavinit gayer, Rabbi Yoshua amar milchemet Amalek. So whenever I write this article, which may be a book, of all the times in Chazal that the person who is the character in the story is the same name as the Tana or the Amora. So of course Rabbi Yeshua points that it's Milchemet Amalek, where Yeshua is victorious in the Milchemet Amalek. Or if nothing else, it will be a mnemonic to... remember this. How many times Rabbi Yitzchak in the Gemara speaks about the shofar, and Akedat Yitzchak is fascinating. How many times Rabbi Yossi talks about Yosef? Again, this is not a coincidence. This happens so many times. But it continues and it says Rabbi Yeshua said it's Muhammad Amalek, as it says Veichlosh Yoshua Amalek. Okay, Rabbi Lezer Hamodai Amar Matan Torah Shama. So now it's interesting. Because we're going to learn that there's actually three different opinions over here. 1 second, I'm going to go back to the other one. The other one says that it's the splitting of the sea. If you look on the bottom, Rabbi Lezer, which may be Lezman Yaakov, says, Kriyat Yamsuf Shema. So therefore, you have one who's saying Kriyat Yamsuf, another who's saying Muhammad Malik. So it's fascinating that Rashi takes two of them and says that he hears both of this. Why would Rashi say that? We'll look back at the Pasuk. It says, Vayishma Yitro Kol Midyan Chotem Adjara, et Kol Asher Asalokim. So therefore, maybe he hears that it's lots of things and not just one thing. But on the other hand, if Rashi's already going to say it's lots of things, so why doesn't Rashi bother to tell us about the third opinion of the Gemara, that it's after Matan Torah, that he hears about Matan Torah? Now, I'm just going to pause there for a second, because Rashi, believe me, knows that Gemara better than I know that Gemara. Okay, I had to look for it, and Rashi wouldn't have had to look for it. So it's interesting he leaves it out. But the other thing I don't want you to move away from is that the Gemara just now presented as a starting point, as a given, as, you know, this is obvious, that Yitro arrives after Matan Torah. Now, if he arrives after Matan Torah, then we do have a little bit of a problem. What is the problem? Well, first of all, the Torah is not in sequence. Now we're back to our old issue of Ein Mukdam U'Me'uchar. Now, so you're agreeing with me. So if you want, you look at the Marsha over here in the Gemara. The Marsha will deal with that question. But apparently the Gemara's understanding the Kol Asher Asa as opposed to the more generic and general Ki Hotzi. That the Gemara's understanding that there was something, because he didn't have to say all of this. He just could have said that Yitro hears Ki Hotzi. You didn't have to have that other phrase, Kol Asher Asa. So it's understanding, presumably, that the Kol Asher Asa is coming to add something. But of course, my question then is, why did Rashi, you know, leave out that other one? And then the bigger issue is, hold it a second, what are we now up to? Now, when you heard me read the Psukim before, that they're already at Har Sinai, then, meaning in terms of something that we only learn in Perek Yotet. The last time that we had seen where they were a place called Rephidim. That's how we ended last week's parsha. That's where the water intrigue happened, and that's where the battle against Amalek takes place. So that's the last time that we had heard by the Rephidim. So somehow they have traveled, and they've gotten to Sinai, which means the events over here, now you understand the Gemara saying, well, this is after. Well, that's just the start of the Gemara, because there's actually a couple of other issues. When we continue to read this, Pasuk Zayin, Vayetse Moshe Lekrat Chatanov Yishtachavu, Vayishaklo, Vayishalu Ishtareel Lashalom, Vayavo Ha'ohela. Vayisaper Moshe Lechotno et Kol Asher Asa Hashem Leparo. Now notice the emphasis is on Yudke Vavke. Now we know that all the way through the discussions with Paro, you know, who's God? I never heard of God. And there was this whole theological undertone to leaving Egypt. Various idolaters, people believing in polytheism, will believe in all kinds of gods and all kinds of powers and so on. So when we read about Yitro, it said that he hears Kol Asher Asa Elokim. Now, we're not sure. I'm going to go backwards to my other problems. This Kohen Midian, is he still a polytheist or is he a monotheist at this point? Is it just that he hears, wow, the Jews have this power with them, but that doesn't necessarily, that in his mind, there's not necessarily exclusivity in terms of power. So now that comment, Ki Otzi Hashem, that's what I'm saying, that's much more interesting. Is that a comment or is that what he's hearing? But now listen to what Moshe says. Moshe says to him, Kol Asher Asa Hashem leParo leMitzrayim, right? And all the way along the way, Vayitzilem Hashem. By the way, that may very well be Vayitzilem Hashem, could be referring to the splitting of the sea and could be referring to Milchemet Amalek, which is very interesting because that seems to be what Moshe, but again, Moshe's emphasis is very clear on Hashem. Vayichad Yitro et Kol HaTova Asher Asa Hashem leYisrael. And after hearing this now, Yitro apparently is convinced, and therefore he is delighted, he's happy, he smiles with all the good that was done by God, Yudke Vavke, for Israel. And then his response to this is, Vayomer Yitro, Baruch Hashem. So again, the Baruch Hashem over here is very deliberate. And part of what I'm trying to point out is that whenever we're going to be having conversations taking place between Jews and non-Jews, between polytheists and monotheists, or supposed polytheists and monotheists, we need to pay attention as far as the names of God which are being used within the discussion. And I think over here that is the case as well. Baruch Hashem, Asher Hitzilat Chamiyad Mitzrayim Miyad Paro, Asher Hitzilat Ta'am Mitachat Yad Mitzrayim. Ataya Dati Ki Gadol Hashem Mikol Elohim? That's not Elohim. So now I know this. Now, again, is this what he knew beforehand? See, that would make a difference. See, if he heard of Matan Torah as well, so Matan Torah is very, very different than just hearing about power. I want to explain this. You know, when Chazal tell us, and it's really based upon the Navi, that Matan Torah is very much like, it's like a marriage. It's the Mishnah. Matan Torah is the Chatuna. Because there's intimacy over there. It's not just a powerful God coming and doing something. It is almost a partnership, and there's something unheard of in this. You know, part of Chazal's response is that when the nations of the world heard about the Sereta Dibrot, okay, the first one, okay, fine. Second, fine. But when he gets to things like Kibbut Avaim and gets to Lo Tirtzach and so on and so forth, when there is this interpersonal concern that God is commanding us to treat one another nicely, that's something which is unheard of in the pagan world. At that point, things are very, very different. So I think that part, again, I'm reading perhaps too much into Rashi, but I think part of what Rashi's concern over here is that he is, again, Rashi read the whole section over here. Whether he read it exactly like I did or I'm reading it like him, that I can't tell you. But what it seems to me in this whole first section, it deliberately doesn't include Matan Torah, because that aspect of Yitro's understanding of what God is doesn't seem to change until he sits with Moshe and Moshe explains to him, no, this is just a very different, there really is monotheism, there really is only one God, and that one God therefore has no needs, and that one God therefore what he wants of us is for us to emulate God, and for us to have empathy, and us to be kind, and us to be decent, and treat one another in a way which is again completely, completely different from the world where Yitro is coming from. And therefore Yitro's focus on Elohim is very interesting, and therefore it seems to be that Moshe is now convincing him that there's something else which is taking place. However, when we then continue after his Baruch Hashem, and after him saying, now I know, and I don't know what to do with that verse, because that verse is a scary verse. Does he say that God is the only God, or just he's the strongest God? Now, Elohim, that's not Elohim. That's not Kodesh, that's Chol. I know that your God that you believe in is more powerful than all the other gods, but he doesn't necessarily state that the other gods don't exist. Ki b'davar asher zadu aleihem. V'yikach Yitro choten Moshe ola uzvachim le'lohim. And then he goes and he offers offerings to Elohim, which I don't know if you realize how bad that is. Do you realize how bad that is? It's very bad. Why is it very bad? Okay, I'll come back and I'll tell you soon why it's very bad. But whether Moshe actually eats of this or not, I'm not sure. Vayavo Aaron v'kol zeknei Yisrael le'chol lechem im chotein Moshe lifnei ha'elokim. So a couple of things over here. What does this lifnei elokim mean over here? What does it mean lifnei elokim? I'll tell you some thoughts. See, once I understand that the Gemara is telling me that this is not necessarily in context, so how out of context is it? And part of what we're going to have to do is one of the things that we had seen previously when I talked about that the staff was turned into a nachash, or the staff was turned into a tanim. So when I taught this to my students in university, I may have even put this on the final, that there is a theory of conservation of reptiles, right? And over here we have a... Well, over here, should we also have a theory of conservation of Moshe's father-in-laws? Which means there's going to be another father-in-law mentioned at another point. To what extent is that connected to this one or not? And to that extent, well, to what extent are we dealing with separate episodes? I just want to pause there for a second. Because once we've lost our context in terms of time, then we have to figure out exactly where it was. And I want to make this either more difficult or more simple for you. You will decide which one I just now did. Am Yisrael end up being, by Har Sinai, from Rosh Chodesh, Sivan, year one, until a full year later, you know, give or take a couple of days until the cloud finally lifts. I believe it's the second month, It's right. It would be Iyar, the second month, 20th day of the month is when the cloud lifts, and that's when they leave. So they're there for a whole. I would say then again, my quick math, I may be off. I think it's a whole year minus ten days. I think that's the amount of time that they end up being there. So now, when I say that that Yitro hears and Yitro arrives, it would be any time from Rosh Chodesh, Sivan in the first year, to the 20th day of that second year. So now I just now gave you a time frame for this, and as I said, I don't know if that made this easier or that made this more complicated. Okay, the other thing is, when he brings an offering, Lefnei Elokim, is Lefnei Elokim, does that mean the Mishkan is already built? I'm just saying very simply, what does Lefnei Elokim mean? Or if you're going to say the Mishkan isn't built, then tell me what's not Lefnei Elokim. Which means, this Lefnei Elokim, what exactly did you do with this? How did you understand Lefnei Elokim? Okay, does it mean in front of the Mishkan? And now that means, okay, that now gave me a little bit more of the time frame, because now I know when the Mishkan actually is going to be built. So now I'm up to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right, a year later, which actually then gives me a time frame of this story taking place someplace between, you know, it essentially gives me a little less than 2 months of the possibility. What does Lefnei Elokim mean? I'll continue with this problem as we go on. I see you're going to be a little resistant today, so...
We'll
beat you down. We'll beat you to submission soon. It's okay. I'm just pointing out, had he built a Mizbeach, then it should have said, oh, and he built a Mizbeach. And he built a Bama, it should have said he built a Bama. What it says instead, that he does list Lefnei Elokim. Lefnei Elokim would have the connotation of being in front or in the Mishkan itself, but I'll show you why.
Okay.
I'll show you why soon. I'll show you. But the other thing which is troubling is it says, Vayikach Yitukhani Moshe, Ola Uzvachim Lelokim. So, and then it says, and they eat lechem. Now, eating lechem, I am sure there are those who will say, oh, eating lechem means they ate from the korban. Or eating lechem means, no, they eat lechem, but they don't eat from the korban. So now that that's completely clear, that there's two completely opposite ways of reading this, I'm very happy. If it's an ola, since when do you eat from an ola? And if it's a zvachim, so what kind of zvachim are we talking about? But the bigger problem over here is the name of God, Elokim, because you never, ever have korbanot being brought to Elokim. It is absolutely, it doesn't happen. But to say that Yitro goes and he decides that this is what he's going to do is really quite interesting. If you want, you can look at source number 11. Tanya Amu Rishimim ben Azai bo re'e ma'ketiv b'parshat korbanot shelo ne'ema behem lo el v'lo Elohim el el ha'ashem shelo yitain pitchon pe lebal din l'chlok. Because we don't bring a korban to the midat hadin to try to forgive us. We bring it to Yudke Vovke, the sense of God is out of time and out of space, the sense of God, which is Kulei Rachamim. The korban is Litz Karev, to become close, but it's not in order to give a shochad or bribery to or bribe to God. So therefore, even if you look in Parshat Noach and you see that there's a two different sections. I had one of my students from a couple of years ago contacted me. He's taking a course in a particular university where he took a course in the Bible and archaeology. And the assignment he was given was to analyze the flood story in terms of the documentary hypothesis. What in the world the documentary hypothesis has to do with archaeology? I don't know. I don't know why. And then he asked me what I thought, whatever. So we had an interesting conversation. But I will say, if you look at the flood story, you'll have first God spoke, and it's Elokim, who says, bring two by two. And then you have Yudke Vavke saying, bring seven by seven. So if you're interested in that documentary hypothesis, so there's two different documents. One says to bring two, one says to bring seven. But part of what that does is it completely ignores Jewish theology. And saying, okay, we're devoid of theology, and therefore there's no meaning in all of this, and everything is completely haphazard or new different documents, which means my starting point is actually the Torah is true, until you can prove otherwise. My starting point is that there are multiple relationships between God and man, depending on, you know, the texture at that particular time. we in our lives we have different relationships with the same people, and they're because somewhat different. You could be my dentist, you could be my friend, you could be my student, and each one of those could have a different element to that relationship, and different names could be used also, which goes right to the point of what's taking place over here. But on the other hand, it's wonderfully consistent that when korbanot are brought, they're always brought to yudke vavke. So therefore, essentially, midat adin says that there's going to be destruction, but the minimal amount will be saved, and that's 2x2. And you can't bring a korban afterwards by the 2x2, otherwise saving them is going to be for naught, because, you know, you're not going to have any more. It's like that cartoon of one unicorn saying to the other, is this the day that Noah said to show up? So then, right, so then there's no more unicorn left. But if we would have brought korbanot from the two by two, then that wouldn't have listed. So then it says, from the behemot ha-tehorot, that you can bring korbanot from those animals, bring 7x7. And that's what Yudkei Vavkei says, which means Benazai's observation goes all the way back to Noach. But that's what's fascinating over here, because there's one exception to Benazai, and that one exception is Yitro. Now, of course, it's not really an exception, because Yitro is not an exception to what Benazai says. Benazai says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us what to do, it's always that way. So now I go back to, so what exactly does Yitro know? What exactly does Yitro believe? Is Yitro a monotheist, or is Yitro not necessarily a monotheist? Is over here, he believes that God is really powerful, but he's not completely convinced the only God that there is. Is he hedging his bets? Ultimately, we're going to see at the end of this section, Vayishlach Moshe et chotno, Pasuk of Zayin, Vayelech lo artzo. And he goes home. Why does he leave? I mean, he wasn't going to open up the first Chabad house in Midian. That, unless you're going to tell me, yeah, that's why he went. Maybe that is why he went. So let's hold off now, and let's think, and let's go a little bit slower again. What happens immediately afterwards is Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayimi Macharat, Vayeshev Moshe, Lishpot et Ta'am. By the way, notice also, Lishpot is Midat Adin Elokim, which goes also into this, I'm going to say it again, this Yitro mode. He sits the next day, and Moshe is there, Min HaBoker Ad HaErev. Vayar Chotein Moshe, by the way, now look at Rashi on Pasuk Yud Gimel, Lemacharat, Motsai Yom HaKippurim Haya. This was the day after Yom Kippur, and then he does this whole analysis. He says, it couldn't have been earlier. Why couldn't it have been earlier than this? Well, there would have been no opportunity. But more than that, when did Moshe learn the laws whereby he's going to be judging the people? That's presumably in Parshat Mishpatim. Eila Mishpatim. So therefore, this has to be after Parshat Mishpatim. So if this is after Parshat Mishpatim, see, Rashi didn't tell us exactly when it is that Yitro came, but the Macharat, he does tell us, and the Macharat, he's telling us, oh yeah, that's after Yom Kippur. Now after Yom Kippur, that took me to year number, what do you want? Let's put it this way. It's they get out of Nisan, and they stand by Sinai, and then 40 days later, they have the Chet HaEgel, and then Moshe has to pray, and finally they get forgiven by Yom Kippur. Moshe finally comes down with the second Luchot, and now is the first time that Moshe's actually had this opportunity to interact with the people, and there's probably this whole lineup of people who need to talk to him, and okay, what about, he took this from me, I lent this to him, and my cow hit his cow, and so on and so forth. You have all of these problems which have piled up, and this is the first opportunity. Now, the truth is, Vayihi Memacharat, which Macharat, again, what Rashi is saying, please don't take me wrong, is correct, that there would have been no opportunity beforehand, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it is literally the day after Yom Kippur, but what he's saying is that it couldn't have been before that day, because there would have been nothing to have taught. And then what happens? Vayomer Moshe l'chanel ki yavol am l'drosh Elokim. So it's very interesting here, they're coming to search God. Now what does that mean? Are they looking for religious experience? I would have used the word Yudkei Vavkei. Or the drosh elokim doesn't mean they're looking for law. You know, what exactly is the correct way of determining what they should be doing? Kied lahem davar ba elai v'shafateti bein ish ubein oeo v'hodadati et chukei elokim v'toratav. And I teach them the laws of God, which again makes it sound very much, this is after Matan Torah, and we have to then again figure out when the first opportunity would have been for this. On the other hand, Yitro says, now this is a really bad idea. This is a bad idea what you're doing. Why? Now, is he speaking as a religious leader, or is he speaking about as a leader? And a leader needs to know how to delegate. A leader can't possibly do every single thing by themselves. And the best leaders, the strongest leaders, are the ones who learn how to delegate. Because by delegating, you also do something else. People end up more often than not growing and becoming greater than they would have been had they never had had that opportunity. So what Yitro says, no, this is a bad idea. And then he suggests this other idea that they should do instead. Atashma b'koli, I'm going to give you advice. V'yi Elokim imach. Notice again his focus on Elokim. Hayata la'am mul ha'Elokim. Again, even though Moshe had this nice talk with him at Yudke Vavke, I don't know to what extent he actually went for it, as evidenced by the Korban, as evidenced now by the whole conversation. And you're going to teach them the derech asher yehu ba, ve'et ha'maseh asher ya'asun, right? V'ata techazem mikol aman shechayu yirei Elokim. Notice also Yirei Elokim, people who are God-fearing. Anche emet, sonei batza, v'samta aleim, sarei alafim, sarei mayot, sarei chamishim, v'sarei asarot. And then you will delegate and give people various positions. V'shaftu ta'am, and they will then judge the people, and only the bigger things will end up coming to you. Im et ha'davar hazeh ta'aseh v'tzivcha Elokim v'yachal ta'amod. In other hands, otherwise it's going to be too much. And v'shaftu ta'am b'chol et ha'davar kasher yavino Moshe v'kol davar asher katon yishpatu eim, and then v'yishlach Moshe. So Moshe does do what it is that he has advised him to do. So now, what we're really going to do is go in two different directions. One is, we've already seen in source number 3 that there is an openness to different approaches as far as what we are up to right now in terms of the calendar. The three approaches, right. So now, what I've already have dropped enough hints along the way is that we need to consider source number 4. Source number 4 is, Vayoma Moshe l'chovav ben ru'oel ha'midyani choten Moshe. So is this the same individual, different individual? And he says, no sim anachnu l'makom asher amar Hashem. By the way, this is really important because this sounds, it's at the very end of the time that they spend by Sinai. The cloud's going to lift up on the 20th day. It sounds like they are suspiciously close to that 20th day. We're going to this place, and he says, you know, makom asher amar Hashem. Again, notice Moshe keeps always talks about Hashem. And v'itav l'ach ki Hashem diber tov Yisrael. No, I'm going to go back home. So I'm just going to read back, assuming now we have our theory of conservation of Moshe's fathers-in-law. So then I assume this is the same guy, and I assume this is the same conversation. And the only thing is that's really interesting is that one is told to us right when they get to Sinai, and the other, or right before they get, and the other one's being told right as they're about to leave. The next verse, by the way, they leave. It's literally right afterwards when they end up leaving. So now, again, I'll ask you, so when does all this take place? Well, now you know the exact time frame, but this would seem to be towards the end. Vayomer, al na ta'az, no, sorry. Vayomer lav lo elech, kim la tziv al matiyah lech. I'm going back home. Which I could say you've given us good advice and so on. Right? And that's when they leave. So I'm saying it's not just somehow remotely connected. It really does, shall we say, sandwich the whole Har Sinai experience right before they get there, at least the way it's presented to us is when we're told about Yitro, and right when they're about to leave is when Yitro ends up going back home. So I'm saying all that is interesting, which means, especially when I then go back and think about what we saw in Chazal, oh, what does he hear? He hears about Matan Torah, and that seems to be the only thing that he's really interested in, is when they're at Sinai, and once they're leaving Sinai, that's no longer of any interest or concern to him. So I'm just putting that here as well, because maybe this is a little bit more interesting. Second thing, in Dvarim, all that I'm reading right now is just to be able to understand the Ibn Ezra that we're about to see. Over here, Moshe in Dvarim gives us a retrospective of all kinds of things that happened in the desert. And around that same time, I said to you, you know, this is too much. I really can't do this. Now, just pause for a second and look at source number five. I should have read five before six, sorry. Source number five. V'lo uchal anochi levadi laseit etchem. Right? I can't do this by myself. Lo uchal levadi seit etchem. So in source number five, you see when Moshe says this. And when does Moshe say this? He says this in Perek Yud Aleph of Bamidbar. When was it that he parted ways with Yitro, or if you insist, Chovav? When was that introduced? Well, that's immediately before this. That's the end of Perek Yud Tet. And over here is in Perek Yud Aleph, Moshe is, oh, I can't do this. The other thing that I need to remind you of is that there's some more intrigue right over here at the end of Perek Yud going into Perek Yud Aleph. Though that's the where the Vayehi ben Sarah Aaron is, and that's where the two psukim are with the nuns, and that's where Chazal tell us, oh, why are they here? Because everything is out of sequence over here, which means the same problem that I'm introducing in Parshat Yitro of things being out of sequence is also the problem, meaning this is the problem where Chazal again are telling us that, oh, things are out of sequence. Look, the main issue of what we normally call Ein Mukdam Mukhar is in the beginning of Bamidbar, when we have various episodes, what we're told in terms of different dates, where we have recorded in the Torah later on an earlier date than something that was said beforehand. So therefore, it's very clear when the dates are given that certain events are told about earlier than later. Sorry, certain events are told earlier than events which happened prior to them. So over here, we have Moshe saying, Lo uchal levadi. Then in Devarim, Moshe comes back, Lo uchal levadi se'et etchem. So going back to number five, V'im kacha atoseli, Moshe says, I can't just do this by myself. So therefore you need to delegate, you need other people. Now, is this the same story in terms of, or is this completely a different story? Because over here it talks about 70 elders, and it sounds completely different. It's 70 elders. It doesn't say, but then also we wonder, hold on, what happened to all those people, all the support staff that Yitro had spoken about, and what happened to them? Why aren't they there in order of helping Moshe? Why does Moshe feel so isolated and so by himself? So now you look in Sefer Devarim, where Moshe tells over the story, Moshe said, I couldn't do it. Right? And now you're so numerous, which is great, and so on and so forth. What did God say? Pasuk Yud Aleph, Hashem Elokei Avichem Yosef Aleichem, Kacha Elef Pamim, right, there's so many, Eicha Asal Levadi Terchem U'maschem U'vrivchem, Havu Lechem Anashim Chachamim V'novim Nidurim L'shevtechem V'asem B'roshechem. But the description over here, the Anashim Chachamim V'novonim, is the description that we have in this week's Parsha, in Yitro, in terms of Yitro's idea. V'tanu Oti V'tumut Tova Devar Zeh Shedibar Tel Asod, and God said, yeah, that's a good idea. V'kachet Roshei Shevtechem Anashim Chachamim V'dum V'tein Otam Roshem Aleim, Sarei Alafim, Sarei Ma'ot, Sarei Chamashim, Sarei Asarot, V'shotrim L'shevtechem. This is the description of Yitro's idea. So I don't know if I just now went too quickly, that in Bamidbar, when Moshe is, oh, I'm all myself, God says, okay, get 70 people. And over here, and then in Yitro, what we had previously is Yitro said, oh, you need to get this to delegate. And here when Moshe is telling over the story, he's combining the two stories together, and he is describing how he feels overwhelmed, and God says, well, you need these Sarei Alephim, Sarei Meot, and Sarei Asarot, which then seems to be that these two stories are, in fact, the same story. Now, keeping all of that in mind, now we can read the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra is over here in Yitro. V'yishma Yitro, hiskir l'mala devar amalek, hila refidim ba. So again, he noticed exactly what we noticed, that story is in refidim. V'yitaru'a parshat b'chodesh ha'shlishi liot k'tuva achar devar amalek. When he's at chodesh ha'shli, what he means by that is that that's Perek Yud Tet. Perek Yud Tet should have come, Ibn Ezra says, right after Perek Yud Zayin. Essentially what he's saying is this arrival of Yitro should not be recorded here because it didn't happen here. Which means we go from Amalek, Rephidim, to Har Sinai. Because it says in Perek Yud Tet Pasuk Aleph, Vayisu Mirephidim Vayuvo Midbar Sinai. On the other hand, when Yitro is there, b'nflei Har Elokim b'Midbar. That means they're ready by Sinai. So he's saying, if you're following the narrative of the story, this episode is not written in its right place. So therefore, first point of the Ibn Ezra is based upon location. Location is a problem in terms of the narrative of the story. Imkein, lama nichnas devar yitro ben shnei parshiyot. Why was it stuck in over here? Which means whenever we're going to get into our problem or solution of ein mukdam u'mukhar, or yes or no, especially if we're going to say things are not in the proper sequence, then why is it placed here? Why is the story of Yitro placed in this particular location or part of the Chumash when this is not the right place? And then he continues and he says, Vagaon, that's Rav Sadia Gaon Amar, Ki Yitro ba el midbar Sinai lefnei matan Torah. So therefore, Rav Sadia Gaon says, no, everything is in the proper sequence. Ulefi dati, shelo ba rak bishana hashenit achar shehukam hamishkan. So the Ibn Ezra says, no, it seems to me that's not correct, but rather he came only in the second year after the Mishkan was already built. Ki katuv biparsha olav zvakim lelokim. Because it says that they brought offerings. So how can you brought lifnei elokim if there's no Mishkan? So therefore he understood the lifnei elokim as being a Mishkan. V'lo iskir shabana mizbeach hadash. He didn't say anything about building a mizbeach. V'od tiv v'odadati tchukei elokim v'et taratav. And it says, Moshe says he's going to teach all of the things that God revealed. V'niza achar matan Torah. He goes, that has to be after matan Torah. Which means the Ibn Ezra just now made a pretty convincing argument, so far, why this section is not in its proper place. V'ha'eda ne'man al divrei, and the biggest piece of evidence he's saying, which supports him, saying, k'ken k'tiv el midbar shecho nesham har elokim. Again, going back to that location argument, that the story of Yitro takes place when they are in already by Mount Sinai. Va'amar Moshe lechovav shehu Yitro kasher pirashti b'parshat ve'el shmod ki chatan Moshe lo shav elorela karov elav ki im lechovav. So he's saying, and Moshe says, ki alken yadata chanotenu b'midbar v'yadanu ki Yisrael amdu b'midbar Sinai kimoshana. So the Ibn Ezra now is going and saying what I had said earlier. What's the time frame? V'nei divrei Moshe yochichu shomer parshat eilu divreim Hashem l'kim d'beri leinu b'chorev leim rav l'chem shevet b'har hazeh penuvas u'lechem. V'nei zeh hazman haya karov l'mas'am. The whole discussion with Yitro took place right before they left. So essentially what the Ibn Ezra is doing is he is using this theory of conservation of Moshe's father-in-law, and these two sections are the same section. And the two times of giving advice are the same thing in giving advice, even though they're articulated a little differently in Bamidbar than they are in Shemot. Moshe unifies them when he discusses them in Dvarim. By the way, you do have a problem then. The problem is, okay, and you already stated the problem, so why is it put here? What would have been so bad? We go straight from Amalek, we get to Har Sinai, and the whole episode with Yitro should be written in one place, before in there in Balotcha. Why is it here at all? So that becomes the question. And he says, he continues in his Vinez Man Shatir Shut Arts, okay. Ubavor Shatim Raim Lo Yachotel Vidal Satitchem, Zo Taita Itzat Yitrosh, Natanlo Mi Machrat Bolim Bar Sinai. Okay, no Mar Moshe Lechovev, Shu Yitro, Ki Marshad, no Simanachnu, for Yishiv Lo Elech, Ki Imel Artsi. And that's why he says, okay, he sends him to go. Which means, essentially, what Ibn Ezra is saying, read these two sections, not just read them together as one large, each one is explaining a little bit of the story. V'niya Faresh, Lama Nichnasa Parsha Yitro B'makom Hazeh. Nonetheless, he's stuck with the problem. Why is it introduced right here? And what he goes on to say is, B'avor Sheskir L'mala Hara'ashas Amalek L'Israel. And by the way, I heard this explanation from Rabbi Soloveitchik. I don't recall him saying it from the Ibn Ezra, but he said the same idea. And by the way, sometimes when he spoke publicly, he did not bring sources. He just gave a public discussion, always independent to a great extent on who the audience was. But I'm sure there was no question that if you would have said to him, where'd you get that? And he said, well, it's logical. Or he would have said, well, you can also see the Ibn Ezra says it. There were times people asked him, do you have a, you know, where did you get that from? And his answer was, a clear and logical mind. that's where you, sometimes, of course. No, sometimes, they're all kind of, once in Shir, there was a young fellow who was very, very clever, and he starts asking this convoluted question. And Rabbi Soloveitchik looks at him and smiles. He goes, when I was your age, I was also a genius. Also an Eloi. So Yeah, I hope you realize that is quite the put down, okay? So. Yeah, but you have to know one's place. It's very important. So why is it placed over here? So what Ibn Ezra goes on to say is that right after the story of Amalek, and which follows after Egypt, maybe we would get into, and by the way, what I'm about to say now, I'm sure rabbis across America are going to say, and if somebody hears me, then they can quote it and say it, and they can turn this into a particular type of Dvar Torah, and you can decide if you like it or don't. But what Ibn Ezra says is that after, and I'm adding to this, I'm embellishing, after Egypt and meeting Paro and the Egyptians, and after Amalek, I can come to the conclusion that all non-Jews are terrible, evil people. And therefore, the story of this very helpful Yitro, who we're told deliberately, very clearly what we're told about him here. He says, Baruch Hashem, thankful to God, brings a korban, he gives advice, he's helpful, but nonetheless, he goes back home, and he's not part of us. He doesn't join us. All of that becomes very interesting. Look, there's some good non-Jews in the world as well, and the Torah doesn't want us to have this this concept of thinking that all non-Jews are evil, because there are evil people and they're very good people, and therefore it was that's what Ibn Ezra says. Why this is placed here? Because he's completely convinced this is not the location for it. This is not where it should be. So I'm sure in the aftermath of a synagogue in America being taken over and the hostages and so on, that someone's going to go and give a Dvar Torah on this. They're the good people. They're bad. And it's true. I mean, let's be honest. It's true. To continue, though, because there's a couple of more things that I still nonetheless want to get to, even though some of you may have been fooled into thinking that we already have a conclusion, what we then have meant now is that things are sometimes out of order. And I don't know how clearly we'd ever seen this before, but now we do get a sense of this. In source number 9, which we're not going to read, the Rambam's son, Rav Avram, quotes the Ibn Ezra, and he quotes his father, as both saying that this is not the proper place for this. And he agrees. But he says it's a much more pragmatic consideration. It's the timeline. There wasn't enough time to get there. He heard about Muhammad Samalik, and then goes, meaning, how long did it take someone to go and inform, and then you're going to come back? It's just not enough time for the traveling to have taken place. But it's still a bit of a difference. It's still a bit of a to get from Rufidim to get to Midian, and then to come back from Midian. He just thinks that the time is a challenge. Very, very, very pragmatic consideration. Okay. Let's, however, take a look in source 13 for a moment. Because once we're told that not only things are out of context, but sometimes there's a narrative or a reason for it, I want to start with source 13. Vayom Moshe zed davar asher tziva Hashem. What are we talking about? We're talking about the man. Meloha omer mimenu mishmeret ledorotechem. But you should take this as a mishmeret ledorotechem. Leman yiru atalechem asher ha'achalti etchem bamidbar botziyatchem mi'eretz Mitzrayim. So again, when exactly is this being said? Vayom Moshe l'Aron kach tzinsenet achad v'tein sham emelo omer man v'nachoto lifnei Hashem l'mishmeret ledorotechem. So, Stu, this is really my answer to you from before. What does it mean here when he says, place it, Lefnei Hashem? Which means, even if you would have been convinced before that Lefnei Hashem, I don't know where that korban, what does this Lefnei Hashem mean? Place it, Lefnei Hashem. And you're correctly citing Rashi here, who writes in Source 14, Lefnei Ha'aron, V'lo ne'mar mikrazeh ad she'nivna ohamoid. And this verse itself cannot be until the Ohel Moed is written. And that's only part of the problem of this Lefnei Hashem in terms of what he's being told to do. And you do realize now that I have another problem. My problem is, what exactly is the time frame of all this? When I say what exactly is the time frame, because Moshe has some 40 years to make this request of him, and this is not exactly clear. So when within that time frame? Again, if I say when the Mishkan is built, okay, so now I have Rosh Chodesh Nisan 1 year later, but continue right afterwards. It says, Kasher tziva Hashem Moshe v'nichiru Aron lefnei ha'idut l'mishmaret. And he did it. So if he did it, where is he putting it? So he's putting it by the Mishkan, but we're still in Parshat B'shalach. Uvnei Yisrael achlu etaman 40 shana ad bo'am el eretz noshevet etaman. Achlu ad ba'am el kitzei eretz Kanan. And they ate it all the way until they entered into the land of Israel. Now, this is fascinating for many reasons. Well, one of the reasons is that it's giving you a perspective. This is 40 years later, which means whatever it is that you imagine that you thought that it talks about in Bishalach, this is much later, which means placing it in the Mishkan is half your problem. Over here, it's giving you perspective of much later. And by the way, until when did they actually eat the man? When did it actually end? It actually ended when they brought the Korban Omer, which is why the word Omer here is so interesting, because it was traded for the measure over here of the Omer. Of the Omer was the size of it, and they end up eating it all the way. If you want, we can see it in source number 20. V'yechanu b'nei Yisrael b'Gilgal, v'yasu ota Pesach b'arbasa yom l'chodesh b'erev b'arvot Yericho. Now they've crossed over. V'yechlu me avor ha'aretz mimachrat ha'Pesach, matzot v'kaloi be'etzem yom hazeh. V'yishbot ha'am mimachrat, b'chlam b'vor ha'aretz, v'lo ya'od l'b'nei Yisrael man. So what day is it? The day that you bring the Korban Omer, as is pointed out by the Radak in source 21, is they ate it, and he tells you exactly which day. There's a slight intrigue there. And he says, then ha'omer, ad shehikrivu bo ha'omer, v'hutru b'chodesh, matzo harbe min ha'chodesh, v'hutru b'chadash, then they can eat from the new grain which has grown in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, being able to bring the Korban Omer ends eating from the man whose size is the Omer. So your 40 years later is actually after the death of Moshe, which itself is really interesting. Again, we have a very simple solution for many of these things, and that is that we believe in something which is called prophecy. But I'm just trying to show you that this thing about Yitro, maybe it's not just about Yitro. Now, one thing that we always think about and always concerns us whenever we hear about somebody saying Ein Mukdam Umukhar and so on is you always want to look at the Ramban. And we tend to overstate the Ramban sometimes because we think the Ramban is always completely, absolutely against it. He's not. He's only against using it as a solution when there's no other, when it's not indicated in the text. Over here, it's indicated in the text. The Ramban can't argue that this is says 40 years later. The Ramban, oh, by the way, Lefnei Hashem, he could possibly say maybe it means something else, and he could, but also said Lefnei Hashem, Lefnei Hashem. So he said placed it, Aaron placed it. So Lefnei Hashem, it's the Mishkan. So that's also not a problem. What's interesting about all of this is the discussions you're going to have. I mean, one of the bigger issues is the way that we're sometimes presented the concept that Rashi will tell us that the building of the Mishkan actually is after the Chet HaEgel, then you think it's kind of an accident and never would have been had there not been a Chet HaEgel. Well, right over here we're told that Moshe says, well, you're going to put it in the Mishkan. There already is a Mishkan over here, even though I'll admit the words aren't said. There's a couple more things. I'm going to end up doing this a little bit quicker than I wanted to. But at the same time, we maybe should pay attention again to source number 12. When I say again, compared to last week. At the end of the war against Amalek, Vayomar Shema Moshe, K'tov Zot Zikaron B'Sefer, V'Simba Aznei Yoshua. Tell Yoshua. Now, is this because Yoshua was the one who went to fight and therefore he's going to continue the fight? He's as his role as general? Or is the fight against Amalek going to continue when Moshe's no longer around? And for that matter, when did God say this? Does God say this the day after the Melchemet Amalek, or is this some wild, you know, some point later on? Because now once I realize that right before this episode is when this thing with the man, by the way, and what's in between all of this, this hopefully you'll appreciate now, what's between this is Moshe being told to take the stick and to hit the rock because there's not enough water, which you now know is an episode which, how do you deal with that one compared to the later episode of when Moshe is told to go take the staff? And by the way, where to take the staff from? You take the staff from. Let's read a little bit more of this because maybe this will all be a bit more interesting than you imagined. Look at source number 15. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Right, this is Parshat Korach. Heshivet mata Aaron lefnei ha'idut lemishmeret. It's the same kind of thing, lemishmeret. But over here it's lemishmeret. La'ot levnei Mary. So what was put in the Mishmeret? What was put in the Mishmeret was also some of the man was put in Mishmeret. Over here, the staff is put in the Mishmeret. But when, as a reminder to those, as a sign to those who rebel. So when Moshe is told now in Perek Kaf in Bamidbar, when the people are complaining about lack of order, kach etamateh, that you can take it. And what does it say in Pasuk Ted? V'yikach Moshe etamateh milefnei Hashem. Again, the same lefnei Hashem, which now you realize lefnei Hashem really does mean the Mishkan in all of these cases. right, b'nei Hashem kasher tzivo. So Moshe took the staff as he was supposed to. But now you realize, hold it a second, Moshe hits the rock because God told him in the last time to hit the rock, and that's right between these other two episodes. And what I'm getting at is, hold it, maybe when God says to Moshe to tell Yeshua, maybe it's because he knows already Yeshua is taking over, and when exactly this is said, which I'm saying, once you leave the sequence of as things take place, a whole new world explodes in terms of possibilities. Look now at source number 17, which is right after the previous one. This is Perikof Aleph in Bamidbar, Parshat Chukat, right after the hitting of the rock. V'yishma k'nani melech arad, they hear whatever, and they take some captors. V'yidor yisro nedr l'Hashem v'yomar, im raton titen et amba zebiyadi v'achiramti et areyim. V'yishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael, v'yiten et k'nani, v'yicharem et hem v'et areyim, v'yikrashem ha'makom charama. They were successful and they called the place charama. One little question. And when did this happen? If you look at source number 18, it's in Sefer Shoftim. It says, Uvnei keni chotein Moshe, which I hope you love, because now we're back to Yitro's family again. Yeah. And they alume irat marim et b'nei Yehuda, midbar Yehuda, asher b'negev arad, v'yelech v'yeshav et ha'am, v'yelech Yehuda, asher manachiv, v'yakuat k'nani yoshev tzfad yechrimu oto v'yikrat shem ha'ir charama. Now, you could argue and say, no, this is a different charama. It's not the same episode. It's called because of the previous episode. But of all people, let's look at the Ramban. Source 19. V'yishlim od b'kan l'saper, ki yichrimu Yisrael et gam et areyim achrei bo'am ba'eretz kanan achrei mot Yoshua l'kayim et nidram asher nadru v'kut shem ha'iram charama. That the Torah is telling us about something which is only going to take place at a much later time, not just after Moshe died now, this is after Yeshua died. And he just now will quote what we just now quoted. But the Torah decided to tell it to us here. And he says, what is this like? He says, so the Ramban just now, we didn't know what he did with that. Now you know what he did with that. He doesn't say anything there in Parsha Peshalach. He goes, yeah, that pasuk is referring to something that happens at a much later time after Am Yisrael enter into Eretz Israel. Now, I may have given you more things to worry about today than I've given you solutions, but what I'm pointing out is that everything is very, very much more complicated. And now here's another thought. And with this, we're going to kind of have to wrap up. One of the things that Yitro was telling Moshe is you don't have to do everything yourself. Now, why is that? Is that because it's too much and you're going to wear out? Or is it because, Moshe, you're also replaceable? And, you know, to look at it the second way, you're also replaceable. That's only that we learn much later on that Moshe is replaceable, but we learn that much later on because of episodes that really started beforehand. We're told about the man all the way even after Moshe is going to die. We're told about Moshe hitting the rock, which is going to influence the second hitting the rock. We're told about by Mechamat HaMalach, he'll tell Yeshua to finish up the job because he's the one who's going to do it. And now you read all those things, and this story is placed right there, and you say, oh my God, what is the Torah actually telling me right over here? Is this really all of this a hint that one day Moshe is going to be replaced? And even Moshe could be replaced. And is that really what we just now understood from all of this? And that's a very frightening thought. I just want to end on something a little bit more positive. That Moshe, again, Moshe is the most modest person. And Moshe is not looking for a job. But he's not looking to work overtime. He's not looking to make more money in all of this. There's a beautiful, beautiful Ramban, which is also completely out of context, but if everything else is out of context today, why can't I bring another? If the Ramban even admits things are out of context, why can't I bring the Ramban out of context? Because I thought that would be nice. In source number 3, it's a Ramban, the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, which describes the Jews being counted. And he says that being counted has, among everything else, it has one really powerful dynamic to it. That as each person passed by, maybe gave their half shekel, and they look Moshe in the eye, and then they look at Aaron and the dad. Look how he describes them. As you come by, ve'echav kadosh Hashem, and his holy brother, the Kohen Gadol, v'hu noda aleim bishmo, and he says his name, yelo b'davar hazeh schut v'chayim. Because at that moment, getting a bracha from Moshe, getting a bracha from Aaron, can you imagine what's like? Kiba b'sod ha'am, and so on. I'm going to stop here for a second. But there's also a flip side of this. And the flip side of it is that the opportunity for Am Yisrael, not that you got a bracha from Moshe, the opportunity for each person to meet Moshe, to look at Moshe, meet Moshe, look him in the eye, is unbelievable. My mother-in-law once told me that she met Rav Moshe Feinstein once. She had a friend who was going through a divorce, and the day that the get was going to be written, it was written in Rav Moshe's house, and she accompanied her friend, and she sat down there. And my mother-in-law never read one tshuva of the Igros Moshe, as far as I know. I don't think she would have been able to read it in Hebrew. But she spoke to him in Yiddish. She did like his Yiddish. She said that he was the most empathetic, the most compassionate, the kindest man. Her big takeaway were his beautiful blue eyes. And she said, no, but he was just so kind and so understanding and so nice. Can you imagine if all of Am Yisrael would have the opportunity to have met Rav Moshe, to look in his eyes, and not just Rav Moshe. It's that sometimes we don't get to meet these people who are the people that we need to meet, and then and all that we do is we end up hearing some of their decisions trickle down or some of their teachings trickle down, but the opportunity actually to meet them is something which Am Yisrael desperately needs. Which means one of the mistakes that we make in terms of Jewish education is that we end up putting people, and again, no insult against any educator, but Am Yisrael also deserves not just to meet the third grade teacher, but deserves to teach, to meet the person who taught the third grade, but not just the person who taught the person who taught the person who taught the person who's the third grade teacher, and to see, as it were, the source, and to see the person, and then the combination of seeing the brilliance, but also seeing the compassion, seeing, you know, the understanding and the empathy, and seeing, and this is what the Masorah is about. That's really the power of this Ramban. Because yes, if Moshe gives you a bracha, that's a bracha. And if Aaron gives you a bracha, no offense, it's better than any Hasidic Rebbe and better than any Admor, any Baba or anything else. But it's not just the power of that bracha. It's the power of the interaction of the meeting. And that's part of what Moshe wants. You know, it's one thing that you taught your student to give the right psak halacha, and he gives the right psak halacha. It's still very different getting that psak halacha from the student of the student than getting that psak halacha from Moshe Rabbeinu himself, who heard it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's just a completely different experience. And even if Moshe is replaceable, it doesn't mean that Am Yisrael doesn't have the right to be able to meet with Moshe. But Moshe gets convinced he can't do everything. And one day Moshe too is going to walk off of the stage.